us, before we get started, what is your name, sir?
Joe Michael Abbott.
Okay, sir. And you are here for the Arizona Board of Executive Committee and the Honorable Miss Woodhouse.
I can barely hear you.
Okay, just one second. I just want to make sure that I have the right person here now. So just for me, sir, this is not for the record yet. Now, what was your name again, sir?
My legal name is Joe Michael Abbott.
Okay. And at this time, we will begin the hearing. And I'm the chairman of the board, and I have requested the Honorable Miss Woodhouse to conduct your hearing at this time. Therefore, Miss Woodhouse will be conducting the hearing, will be chairing the hearing, and will serve as the lead at this time, sir. So please just hold on, sir.
Okay, good morning, sir. Could you please, I'm sorry, we've already stated it twice, but for a third time, please restate your full name and your ADC number for the record.
Joe Michael Abbott. My DOC number is 120372.
Okay, thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and this is for a 412B parole, which is parole to a consecutive sentence, or absolute discharge. That's the hearing today. You will become eligible for this in November 27th of this year. So whatever action the board takes today, it won't take effect till November. Just want to make sure you understand that. I'd like to introduce the board to you, sir. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, good. I want to make sure because we have trouble with our microphones sometimes. I'd like to introduce you to the board. If you look on the video screen to your right, so to my left, that way, on the very end is the Honorable Louis Quinones. Next to him, the Honorable David Neal. In the center right here next to me is the Honorable Dr. C.T. White. He's a board chair. On the other side here is the Honorable Michael Johnson. And my name's Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing today. So we'll start with just a brief summary, sir, and I'll just ask you to make sure that this information that I've pulled out of the records is correct. Looks like you're 62 years old, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And you're serving 25 to life for the crime of murder in the first degree, and then consecutive to this, you have a 21-year sentence for kidnapping.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the sentence that you would be paroling to if the board were to grant parole today. You'd be paroling to it in November. These crimes occurred, according to the records, between approximately June 15th, 1993 and July 15th, 1993. And you were about 36 years old at the time, sir? 35, 36?
Yes.
Okay. And you were convicted by a jury on June 13th, 1995, and sentenced on April 11th, 1996. I wonder why that was so long. Do you know why there was so long between
the... There was multiple co-defendants.
Oh, I see. So they waited for all of that to happen before you got sentenced.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Just looking over your discipline history, looks like you've had 8 majors in this time, which is, kind of moderate, not significant. Your last discipline, not major, was February 23rd of 2015, and it was tampering with the security device, and I believe it involved putting paper in the door so that the door wouldn't lock or something.
No, ma'am, the door was rattling, it was a windstorm, and I was working on my legal paperwork, and I put some piece of paper on a piece of metal that's way above the lock just to keep it from rattling, and stop rattling, and the female officer thought I tampered with the lock, but I was not.
Got it, okay.
So that's why it was informally resolved.
Right, okay. And then there's also one in 2014, April 30th, and that was for disrupting count. I don't know what that was about, if you remember. In 2014, you might not even remember. I didn't make a note.
2014,
you
was in the bathroom.
Yeah, so it was probably out of play, probably, but sometimes that happens. Looks like this is your first hearing before the board.
Yes.
So, okay. So we'll try to conduct the hearing in a kind of, quote, normal fashion, so you can see how these go, how poll hearings go. We have in attendance today, we have a representative from the county attorney's office, the prosecutor in your case, and we also have two victims who are present in the room today. Okay, so it looks like you owe some restitution in this case, $651.36. Has that been paid, sir?
No, ma'am. Because of my medical issues and everything else, I'm on a no-work status.
Okay.
I can't work.
Okay, and I don't think it's technically due until after you're released, but sometimes people manage to pay them off early, which is the only reason I ask. Okay, and you're showing that, your records are showing at least, that you've taken cultural diversity and some computer tech classes while you've been in prison. Any other programming, sir?
Just working.
Okay.
When I could.
Okay.
I had to fix a lot of their sewing machines also because they don't have anyone that knows what they're doing with them really.
Oh, and you know how to fix sewing machines?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. And then your file also shows that your release plan ultimately, although this would be to the next sentence, ultimately you would release to live with your mother in Phoenix. And it looks like you're a veteran. Which branch did you serve, sir?
I was with you. I was with the United States Army.
With the Army? Okay. And what years were you in the Army?
I was discharged in 1976.
76, okay. And the record shows an honorable discharge. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so we're
back. I hold military benefits.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
We want to talk a little bit then about the crime itself, and we'd rather hear it from you. I mean, I know what's in the record, but would you tell us what happened the day of the crime?
What happened pretty much was that I received a phone call on my pager with a phone number. So I returned a call and turned off me on a pager. And next thing I knew, it was the victim. He called back to my phone where I left him there. And the kid that I knew was Dummy, who I went to stay at my place, says, I knew Michelle, his girlfriend. And they told me about a person that did pistol whipped and robbed one of their friends' mother. And I told them, oh, man, I've got a right to confront the person. And they kind of got me allowed in to be able to confront the person, catch up to him at my residence. My main concern was that the gentleman that they wanted to catch up to did carry a gun, was a felon. He had previously bragged by his girlfriend, one of the other victims, that she had shot at her boyfriend, and that she carried the gun a lot of times, that he carried it, and would use it. So I was nervous about them using the gun. So I told them, okay, if they come in and confront him, I'm going to knock him down and make sure he's not armed. I'm taking the gun away from him. He didn't have a gun, so I made sure the female didn't have a gun. And then I pretty much stayed in the bedroom most of the time away from it.
But this took place at your residence?
Yes, ma'am. The Michelle, who was I met her from another person I met. She had a daughter and didn't have a place to stay at the time, so I let them stay in my residence.
Okay.
Just to try and get on
their
feet.
Well, sir, I'm just curious why it's very complicated when I read the actual incident, the way it's officially written up. It's very hard to understand what was happening. But what I'm curious about is why. What was going on in your life that you were involved with so many people who had guns and needed to be... needed to beat up on people? What was going on? What were you doing?
I did not know the other individuals that came to the apartment to catch up to them. Now, I did a lot of repossessions in Washington State. I was licensed to carry a gun. I have been stabbed before, and I have, you know, a permit to carry a gun to protect myself. I don't know, it's kind of difficult to explain. Repossession can be very dangerous.
I understand.
If you have people that will shoot at you,
sure,
will try to come at you with knives and all sorts of things.
Right.
Especially when you're just trying to recover the legal owner's property.
So you were working as a repo man at the time?
I was away from Washington State where I'm doing my business at. I was in Arizona because my mom was dying of cancer.
Okay, so you were here and you had an apartment. And what made you let these people come to resolve their issue at your apartment?
Well, when a man pistol whips and robs another man's mother, I mean, I feel they have a right to confront him. What they do is up to them. I'm getting out of the way. Pretty much, I was pretty much out of the way as much as possible. The only time I got pretty much in the way was basically when his mother, they brought his mother over to confront him also. And the kid that he was out of the apartment for a while, she wanted me to get the other person out before her son does something for doing that. So I was trying to get him out. And then I'm getting him dropped off up on a highway. He tried to stab me.
So why, when the individual's mother was pistol-whipped, why were the police not called?
There was a police report and everything on that, by what I understand.
And yet, someone wasn't content to let the criminal justice system address this.
I don't know what they were going to do. That's, they can catch up to him, and if they decided to bring him over to law enforcement, that's their choice. I'm getting out of the way.
So what was your role in this incident? What was your role? Where were you and what did you do?
I was in my apartment primarily, and I knocked him down when he put his hands from the top of the table down towards his waistband. And I made sure that the female was not armed.
Okay. And then what? Because there's
and then I,
go ahead.
I pretty much stayed in the apartment in my bedroom. I told the female that her best bet is to tell him, because she said that her boyfriend forced her to be involved. And I told her, you need to tell them.
What was your role with respect to the victim being stabbed? What was your role?
I was trying to get him out of the house, up on the highway, away from everything, dropped off. And next thing I knew, he jumps on top of me, and I thought he tried to hit me. I put my arm up the block. Second time he tried to hit me again, and looked like, and the next thing I felt was a knife touch my arm and cut him off. It was a superficial wound, and I had a knife that I used to protect and retaliate against what he was doing to me.
Well, so there's indication here that at one point, and I'll read this right out of the report, the defendant, and that would be you, threatened the victim's 15-year-old girlfriend with a knife and ordered her to disrobe and walk around the living room naked as a means of goading the victim. Did that happen?
I did not threaten. I did not have any weapon on my hands or anywhere on my hands. The hearing, it was alleged I had a .45 Magnum, a pistol. And I did not have a knife on my hand at any time other than I had a knife in my hand and put it in my pocket so I could leave. That was the only time I had a knife in my possession. The gun that I had was locked up, was in a drawer, and the individual named Gumby, he ended up taking it out, which I was not happy about him doing.
Mm. So he took your gun out of the drawer?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, sir, I'm really not clear about what happened, but I'm going to let my fellow board members ask questions if they have them. And Mr. Johnson has questions.
So I had a couple of questions. The first question I had is that, were you a member of a gang during that period of time? Was this all involved a motorcycle gang? Did this? I'm sorry.
To share a mic, sorry.
And I'm thinking I'm talking into
it. I forgot.
So were you a member of a motorcycle gang at the time this occurred?
No, sir. I ride a motorcycle. I have met a lot of different gang members in different organizations, anything from the Gypsy Jokers. I met some Hells Angels, some Banditos, and also CMA.
So the other, so the other members, the other co-defendants in this incident were members of the Hells Angels?
By my understanding, the mother, whose lady was pistol-whipped, and her husband was a dead Hells Angel member.
Okay, all right. And so you were with some of these gang members, or at least motorcycle gang members, but you weren't an official member, is that what you're saying?
Have you ever been on Christmas runs, or rode motorcycles, what's called Christmas runs? We end up getting toys and going to the Capitol in Washington State.
Okay, so Mr. Poe, Mr. Sam, let me go back to you. So were you or were you not a member of any of these gangs? That's just a yes or no answer.
No.
Okay.
Yes or no.
Okay, well, that's what I was just trying to get the answer. My colleague, Ms. Rittenhouse, asked you, did you honor the 15-year-old to disrobe and walk around nude in front of the victim? And you never did say, did you or not do that? All you said is that you didn't have a weapon, but did you honor her to disrobe?
Yes, to make sure she was not armed.
So, in order to make sure
I was not going to touch any girl. I've never hit a woman in my life or put my hands on a woman.
Okay, so, but you did honor her in this room. So, when you say you wanted to make sure she wasn't armed, you told her to take off her clothes in this room. That's the way you could tell she wasn't armed.
Yes, sir.
So, why did you have her parade around in the nude?
I told her she needed to go out there and tell them that he or she force her to be involved in what he did as far as armed robbery and pistol whipping a man's wife, man's daughter.
Okay, so you said that, did you help forcibly take the victim out to the car when he was being driven to the desert?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, how did Greg? Greg took him out, and what did you do?
I just went out through the car. I told him to make sure he gets dropped off.
Did you get in the car?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you went a little bit more than going out to the car, because originally you told Mrs. Rittenhouse that what you did was that you made sure no one was armed, and then you spent the rest of the time in your bedroom. But
I made sure the victim, the person that died, was not armed, and then because of him previously saying that she had shot her ex-boyfriend and would use a gun, I made sure she was not armed, and then I went to my bedroom.
So how did you wind up coming out to walk out to the car with the victim and get in the car if you were in your bedroom during that whole time? How did you wind up doing that?
Well, when they were making a big party out of all this craziness, from what I understand and found out later on, they were all using drugs except for one victim.
Okay.
They were dead to deceased, and I went to get some water to drink for this quite a while.
And so you went out to get some water, and they would take the water. What was going on when you went out to get some water?
I went to get some water in the kitchen.
Okay, so what was going on when you went to get the water?
There was the individual, the mother was pistol whipped. Him and another person had left to go get something to eat while he had his other friends keep control over him. I went and got something to drink, and his mother asked me to get the person out of there before son does something stupid.
Okay, so why did you get in the car with him if you wanted to go out and tell him to make sure he drives home? Why, How did you wind up in the car?
So he made a remark, or I was gonna, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. I go, no, you're not. You're getting dropped off. And he kept saying the same thing. So I go, look, I'll make sure you get dropped off. I'll get the whistle. I even gave him a shirt. So this witness, when he came to the apartment, he had just a t-shirt. I gave him a long sleeve shirt. So he could have something to wear, at least other than a shirt, t-shirt.
Okay, so he got into the car, and en route and driving him to the desert. Somehow, was he tied up?
No, he was not. I mean, I told him one time, they had him tied up.
Okay, well, I'm just going to kind of sharpen this up, because anyway, in the pre-sentence report, the answer is you say that you stabbed the victim two times, once in the chest and once in the abdomen. Is that right?
The first time I stabbed him was when he
jumped
on top of me in the car.
Okay.
The first time he hit me, his forearm hit my collarbone. When I tried to block it the second time, I felt the knife blade cut into my wrist. So I went got to my knife that was in my pocket. I got it opened up and stabbed him to get him stopped from doing that to me.
Okay, so you stabbed him.
And
you stabbed him.
I stabbed him in the abdomen area, and it was more going down towards the lower part of the head. By my train, I'm always told to go up high. So I backed up a little bit and stabbed up in another direction, which would be going up towards the chest area.
Okay, so in the report it says that you described the knife maneuver as a grab and hook, which you learned during your time in the military service martial arts training. Is that right?
Yes, they give a certain amount of training in certain martial arts, basically to be able to sit there and stop a person or to put them down.
So you received that training that you say that you use, as you just described. So it would have been a training to kill or take someone down, as you say.
Yes, sir, it would do that.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Williams has a question for you.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Acid?
Yes, sir.
I know you stated this earlier. I just want to be clear on this because it went kind of quick. Why did you say you were in Arizona again and not in Washington State?
My uncle was terminal with cancer. He owned a very large business and asked me to come down and help with a lot of things regarding his business. He ended up leaving a very substantial amount of funds for his two children, and his wife ended up with all the businesses and property. The children ended up equal to $5 million.
So how were you making a living in Arizona when you left Washington?
I was working for Mokling Sewing Centers, which was a Singer company, and I had my operation up in Washington State going for repossessions.
I'm going to jump around a bit, but there's various parts to your parole request. Have you received confirmation that you're eligible for VA benefits? You know, something you write in the VA saying that you had an honorable discharge, and upon application, you're eligible for benefits.
I'm eligible for benefits.
Okay, and that's something they responded to you in writing?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Again, and I'm asking that specifically, regardless of how this board votes today. We do look at individuals' release plan, and sometimes there's vague information in there about benefits such as Social Security or VA. So I did want to understand whether or not you actually have benefits.
Yes.
To get into the offense itself, I think you did early during your discussion with one of my colleagues that you felt an individual have the right to confront somebody if there had been some sort of dispute or assault, or what did you mean by that?
Well, if a person turns around and does something to your family, I mean, a person can confront them, whatever they do, whatever a person does, if they want to confront the person verbally, that's what they have a right to do. If they feel that they have there was a crime committed, if they want to use like the law enforcement to justify it, to take care of the problem, that's an option they can do. If they want to just put their hands on for a little bit, that's something else they can, I feel they can do probably. But I didn't believe they were going to kill them or have anyone get killed there.
I guess that's well, I was leading to the next question as to how far confront meant, because now I'm filling in the blanks here. You didn't say this. I'm just trying to figure out, well, if you feel that someone has the right to confront someone who allegedly assaulted somebody, I don't understand what the end game is, other than yelling at someone not to do that again, which doesn't sound very realistic. It sounds like if you're assisting someone in confronting an individual who allegedly assaulted someone, it doesn't sound like it was just to get half words, so to speak. It sounds like it's leading up to an assault.
I believe there was a possibility they're going to maybe slap him around some or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what was in their minds. All I knew is I did not want no gunfighting going on because there were neighbors. The walls are thin in apartments and bullets can go through. I also know that Michelle had a young child there. I did not want the child to be in danger as far as a gunfight.
Keep in mind, based on your word choice, it sounds like that it would have been okay for a gunfight to go on someplace else.
I don't. The thing is, I knew the individual they were going to go confront was using a gun. That's what I was afraid of. And I was afraid also that the other victim, his girlfriend, would use a gun because of what he had previously stated, that he shot at her ex-boyfriend. He bragged about it.
Okay, and again, I recognize this question was asked and answered. It sounds like that you knew members of other motorcycle clubs, but you yourself are not a member of a motorcycle club.
No, I'm not. I ride a motorcycle. A friend of mine, Lauren Kerr, rides a motorcycle, who we ride a lot together, and his other friend, Judge Lawrence Wilson, is a Omishkow South District Court judge. We all ride together a lot. I mean, a lot of people ride motorcycles. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, I certainly am not saying that either. Yes, there are certainly a lot of people who enjoy motorcycle riding. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is why you were invested in this confrontation, regardless of what came of it. Why were you invested in it?
Michelle's boyfriend, his friend, wanted to catch up to the guy. I knew there was, by what he said, that the police had been involved in it. And I think that's why they wanted to catch up to him.
Well, I'll ask again, why were you invested in this confrontation? Why did it matter to you?
It didn't matter to me. The only thing that mattered was that they wanted to get him pitched up to him at my house. Because he was coming over there to allegedly finish attack two on Greg Waterman, Michelle's boyfriend. That was the individual who friend was whipped and robbed. They were staying there. And I sat there and go, well, if you're going to catch up to them, then, you know, that's up to you guys. But I do not, I'm going to make sure that there's no guns are involved. That man will use a gun by what he's talked about before, and so will his girlfriend. And I told them, to tell their friends not to come in with guns out. And they did come in with guns out, which upset me.
Okay, sir. I have no further questions, but thank you for answering my questions, Mr. Assey. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Johnson has some follow-up questions.
Sir, how old were you when this incident occurred?
36, I believe.
You were 36 years old? And your other co-defendants were at least 15 years younger than you?
At least.
Were they minors? Juveniles?
They were younger, but they, I don't know how old they were.
So all of the other defendants were juveniles at the time that this incident occurred, and you were the 15 years, at least 15 years older than the minors when this incident occurred. And according to your alleging that they did all these acts and you had no control over what was going on, it occurred at your apartment, you set it up, and the other defendants were minors.
Sir, I did not make the contact to the other individual that was the deceased. They want somehow, I think, I'm just guessing, is that they ended up contacting him to come down and finish attack two on Mr. Waterman. And that's how I'm getting contacted.
Okay, so I'm just trying to...
He wanted to come down and finish attack two on Mr. Waterman. So somehow there was a contact by them previously that I did not know about.
Okay, so I'm just trying to make clear there was three other defendants in his cell. All three of the other defendants who were involved in this incident were all the minors, the juveniles. Is that right?
Yes, I believe so. I'm not sure about one or two of them.
Okay. Well, you said
you were in the vehicle.
You were how 36, you said, sir?
Yes, sir.
32, 36, and they were at least 15 years younger than you. Was you in the lead down in their teens?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir.
13 or 30, 20, maybe.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from board members? Dr. Wright.
Thank you so much, Madam Reed, the Honorable Ms. Windhouse. I'm getting a little lost. I'm trying to figure out who you are, first of all, sir. Where were you born, sir?
I was born January
5th, 1956. Where?
Florence, Arizona.
Okay. And I only want to ask that question because as I went through the notes, it's not sure where you were born, and that just caught my interest as I went through much of many of the notes. And so how did you end up in the state of Washington, sir? You were born in Arizona, so how did you end up in Washington State, sir?
I was in the military up there. I have friends up there and also a few family members up there.
And then you was discharged from the military, and you remained in Washington State, and then you came to Arizona after, because your uncle had his health challenge. Am I correct, sir?
He had pancreatic cancer. He was terminal.
Okay. And what happened after, had this crime already been committed? But what happened after his demise, after he died? What happened, sir?
Right after he died, or?
Somewhere along the way he died. You came down to take care of his, to assist him and his property, his business. And I'm just wondering what happened. Did you continue to take care of the business, or what did you do, sir, down here in Arizona after his death, sir?
After his death, I was taking care of the last parts of the trust established where Jorge Ford and Sam Newell and myself were the trustees. We had to make sure everything was set and take care of it for the children, as his children. I was preparing to get ready to go back to Washington State before the incident happened.
So if this incident had not happened, you would have returned to Washington State. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir. At that time, I would have.
Okay.
My brother right now, he's a quadriplegic, He was in an accident in Washington High School, playing a senior. He's my mother is the sole caregiver, and she's in her 80s, mid-80s. See if I can check my fingers. She was born, I think, in 1932, which puts her in her mid-80s.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you, so you're, I'm moving around, I'm just trying to figure out, as you know, what we're trying to do, what I'm trying to do as a board member. I'm just trying to get to know you better, because this is the first time that we have an opportunity to talk with you. So you came down from Washington State, and you, after your uncle's demise, you helped to take care of the business, and you were in the process of returning to Washington State if this incident had not occurred. So, and looking at your release plan, and of course, as Ms. Greenhouse, Honorable Ms. Greenhouse indicated that you would not be released, you would just be moved to the next consecutive sentence if the bill saw fit. But you indicate that you would go to 11416 44th Street in Phoenix. Why would you go there, sir? What's there, sir? Is that an apartment of yours, or something that your uncle or some family members there? I'm just wondering why you select that address, sir.
My younger brother David and my mother at that address. My mother has arthritis, extremely bad, where she has problems moving around. And she's constantly complaining. I've come down and help her take care of David. The biggest problem we have is at night, if someone there and a fire develops in the house, he cannot get out of the bed. He has to even be moved repeatedly because of his being a quadriplegic. He can't roll over like a normal person would, and he would end up being bed sores, or what we call pressure sores. And he's had a couple of them before, which have hospitalized him and caused infections. And she's complaining to me now that she wants me there to take care of him, because she can't have a very hard time with it. It's afraid that if there's a fire in the house, that she wouldn't be able to get him out of the house.
Okay, I understand. Let me just ask one other question, sir. And I think you've already answered it two or three times, two or three different ways. But why were you hanging out with these young people who were at least 15 years younger than you were? What's going on there? I mean, you know, that's just kind of not logical to some people like myself. So what was really going on with you and these young people who are much younger than you are? You answered this, but I'm just asking again. Why would you be hanging out with such or being around people that age, sir?
Well, first off, Michelle, I met her through another person. She was living in an apartment and no longer able to live there. She had a younger child. I let her stay at my apartment so she can get on her feet. She had a younger boyfriend who was a lot younger than she was. She turned around, I let him go ahead and stay there with her, and they were his friends. Those are all his friends. They were people that Greg Waterman knew. I just barely met them that day. So the only juvenile that I knew at the time that was over there was Greg Waterman, and I don't know how old Michelle was. She had a child that was several years old. I couldn't see a child living on the street. This mother couldn't have an apartment or place to live at the time.
Which I understand and can appreciate, but it's your testimony that you didn't know these people. I mean, you knew Michelle, but you didn't know these people. A boyfriend just showed up with them, and that was the first day that you've seen them, and then the incident took place that first day that you met these other people who were in your apartment at the time of this offense. Did I still remember that, sir?
The only actual person I knew was Michelle, and I just barely met Mr. Waterman. The others I never met until that day.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you. Thank you so very much for your time, and thank you so very much, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Mr. Esten, one of the things that we do in these hearings is we'd like to know how, I mean, if the tables were turned and you were sitting in this chair, why should this board grant this parole?
Well, for one, I had no idea for sure what was going to happen. I mean, if I would have known that they were going to do something as far as to kill him, I would not have allowed it. I would not have wanted him there. And right now I have my brother who is seriously in a bad situation. He was injured in Washington High School with an accident at the school. He cannot take care of himself. My mother's having a very bad time trying to take care of him. My main concern is to make sure he can take care of me. I have known Mr. McQueen very well as far as my mother, and I'm looking at possibly getting part-time work at the house. This way I can take care of my financial necessities. I have surgery that need to be done that I can't get done really here. And I don't want to, they've almost done diabetic several times. My blood sugar had dropped very low because the DOC staff have not been able to feed me at the proper times after I get the insulin, and they've almost killed me twice. So I'm worried about myself. Where they killed, there was three other veterans who have died at Cimarron within a 6-month period while I was there, and I'm afraid that's going to happen to me next.
All right. Mr. Acid, we have people here in the room who would like to also testify, so I want to give them the opportunity. So we will do that at this time. Would you like to go first, sir, or however you feel?
Thank you, ma'am. For the record, my name is Chris Sam.
Okay, you can just come right up here, and then you can speak into the mic. And please restate your name. Thank you.
My name is Chris Sam, and I'm from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office.
Thank you.
There are two individuals here to speak. I'm going to ask them to speak before I give my remarks, if that's okay with
Perfect.
The board.
Perfect. That's fine.
I believe the first individual who's going to speak is Sarah Quintero, who was okay. Sarah Rice at the time of this incident.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming today. And just please state your name for the record.
My name is Sarah Ann Quinto.
Welcome.
Hi. Do I just go into it?
Or just whatever you want to show the board.
I'm terrified to be here right now and to witness this gentleman in complete denial of his actions and the pain that he's caused me. In looking at his, behavior behind bars, I don't see how anybody would possibly think that he could be ready to be released. He's gone years before between infractions, just because it's been 3 years since his last one. I don't think that holds any water for him. He has not expressed anything but self-preservation. He has no remorse for his actions or the irreparable pain his actions have caused me and the family of the deceased. He has continuously lied, changed his story. I think if he's going to have a lie, he should write it down and maybe stick to that story. I'm shaking. The things that he did to me and the pain that he caused me, I have not gotten over. I've been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's been difficult for me to live a normal life because of these things that have happened to me, and I would be terrified if he were ever to be released. Thank you. I'm disgusted by everything that he said.
Thank you, Ben. Let me see if the fellow board members have any questions. Thank you so much for coming today. Good morning. Please state your name.
My name is Rosalind. I'm the mother of Sarah, who just spoke.
Thank you. What would you like to tell the board?
The prisoner stated in kind of a sideways way that he wanted to be a support to his aging mother. After the trial originally, I remember looking into the court, and I knew that I had seen his family before somewhere. And I couldn't place where. And it wasn't until everything was all over that it finally dawned on me that my mother bought my first Singer sewing machine from his mother. And at the time, what happened, I know, isn't it crazy? But at the time, what happened, I'm watching my mother talk to the sales lady and everything. His sister comes up and says, hey, you know, you got a phone call. And the mother goes back and she starts muttering to herself, like, he knows he's not supposed to call me at work. How am I going to get through to his head? Why doesn't he ever learn? What am I going to do with that boy? And she was saying all this kind of stuff all the way back to the desk where the phone was. And this was at Christel. I was a teenager. And that's where I knew I had seen them before. This man has been a problem to his mother before any of this happened. He was not going to be a support at his old age. He's just saying stuff. This whole hearing is like ripping a scab off a wound. It's very difficult. The whole concept of closure is a farce because it doesn't close. We have to do this. I am asking that this be denied. I am asking that any other hearings going forward be put off as long as possible. In my opinion, life means as long as he's breathing. And then, if you want him to serve something else, he can do it 6 foot under within the walls. After that, whatever. But this person must not be out. He hasn't given care about rules or even what his mother wanted from when he was young. He's not going to care now. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Sammons. Thank you.
Thank you, board members. Respectfully, on behalf of the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, we are asking that parole be denied at this time for Mr. Asid. One of the things I noticed is that the defendant has significantly downplayed his involvement in this incident, and I thought it would be important for the committee to know that of all four of the defendants who were involved in this crime, the prosecutor, who was obviously not myself, but the prosecutor at the time, Mr. Sid, was the only individual who the state asked for the death penalty. And that's because he did not have a minimal involvement in this crime. He had a substantial involvement in this crime. It was his apartment that was used to lure the victim. He is the individual that tackled the victim and helped tie up the victim to a chair and then participated in essentially what was torture for several hours. His story of sitting in his bedroom while all this is happening is just simply not credible based on the facts that we have in this case. Obviously, as the committee just heard from Ms. Quintero, there was a lot of emotional trauma, not just for the victim who died, sitting there tied to a chair, being tortured, being told at one point by, I don't know who, but one of the individuals, you are going to die, being told to say goodbye to his girlfriend, implying that he'll never see her again. and then being taken into a car and driven out to the desert, you can only imagine the emotional trauma that he suffered prior to his death. But then you also have the emotional trauma that Ms. Quintero suffered at the time. She was 15 years old when this happened. She was forced to disrobe. She was forced to walk in front of her boyfriend, who's tied to a chair being beaten. You can only imagine what would have been going through her head at the time of this incident. So, board members, considering the substantial amount of emotional trauma suffered by both of the victims in this case, the brutality of the murder, because even if you take Mr. Assid's story that he stabbed the victim, and I'm not saying this is true, but that he stabbed the victim after he cut him with a knife, they still took him out to the desert and repeatedly stabbed him multiple times in the chest, back, and neck area, and then left him in the desert. They didn't take him to a hospital. They didn't try to get medical care for him. They took him and then stabbed him more. This was a brutal murder. I've seen more disciplinary infractions, but 25 disciplinary infractions with 8 majors is certainly not a model prisoner by any means. And I think, given everything, the disregard for human life, what appears to be a lack of remorse, and given his involvement in this incident, ladies and gentlemen, I think that parole should be denied at this time, and that is my recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for him? Mr. Johnson has a question for you.
Oh, sorry.
So in the information that we have, and the county attorney who was prosecuting at that time states that Mr. Assad was the mastermind. Is that the position of the county attorney's office? I noticed that in the sentencing, the other defendants got way less time than Mr. Assad did.
Mr. Johnson, that is my understanding, that that was kind of the prosecutor's belief based on everything that he knew at the time. I know Mr. Waterman, who was 17 years old at the time, if that answers one of your earlier questions, was also convicted by a jury and sentenced to 25 years. Mr. Drew pled guilty and was given 17 years, so he got a benefit, I believe, partially because of his plea. And then the last co-defendant, my understanding is that he cooperated with the state and actually testified, which was partially why he received such a reduced term, which I believe was 10 years. So I don't know if I answered your question, but that's the belief that I have, yes.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, and thank you, Mr. Sammons. Mr. Assad, we're back to you. We're coming toward the end of your hearing, but we want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement, if you'd like to do that. And we just ask that you not repeat something you've told us before. So what else should the board know, sir?
I do not want to have any contact or be anywhere near Mrs. Rice or Mrs. Quinteros. I'm sorry if I don't pronounce name right. Thing is, in a way, I sit there and when the prosecutor said that he was stabbed multiple times, I did not stab him multiple times, just the two in the front area. He came off of me. Mr. Waterman pulled him off of me when in the vehicle. Outside the vehicle, another individual did stab him multiple times. And once they did that, I could not sit there just. He was already dead at the time. And I was shaking my head, but, you know, he stabbed so many times, there's no way I could even attempt to tag him to the hospital or any place because you stabbed him several times and he's already dead now. I didn't know what to do. I was very shaken up about the fact that I was almost stabbed. I've been stabbed before, and it's not a very comfortable feeling.
Okay, sir.
The thing is, my main concern is to get to the point to where I can be taking care of my brother. If there's operating surgeries I need to get done so I can take care of my health and try to take care of my brother. And this, the other individual stated that I have more than one brother. David has caused some issues at times. He sometimes with another person. Now, my mother has always, whenever I've been around, she had me do all the work at the house in regard to any type of mechanical, because my father, when he was alive, could not do electrical, or a lot of times had to do repair of drywall or anything like that. I was the one in the family that had more knowledge in that fact, because I did work construction when I was younger.
Okay, so.
Same thing with repairs on bids. I took care of a lot of things like that for them. But
okay.
I was in Washington State at a time than what I am in this big risk now.
So any other information the board should consider concerning releasing or granting parole to your consecutive sentence?
Yes, like I said, I need to be able to have the proper medical care. My mother is not as well, and my VA benefits will take care of all that.
Okay, sir. You're kind of repeating yourself. That's why we're asking just for things that you haven't told us.
Yeah. I don't know much else that I can say. That just my brother, because of his condition, makes it,
okay,
hard
sir.
To take care of it.
All right, that's certainly understood. Thank you, Mr. Asad. The board is going to go into discussion. So I know this is your first hearing. The board does all its discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law. So we have not discussed your case before this moment, and we just invite you to stay on the phone, remain silent, listen to the discussion, and we'll be back with you with the decision in just a moment. Okay, sir. The board is now in discussion. And Mr. Asad is an individual who was involved in a crime. The details of the crime are still a little confusing to me, but there were a large number of people involved, most of them, if not all of them, younger than he was. And as Mr. Johnson pointed out, he was the oldest person there, and presumably the one who had the most maturity in dealing with the situation. But nonetheless, guns were brought. There was a violent violence was going to ensue no matter what in this situation, it sounds like. And Mr. Asad, I'm not feeling that I'm having a full understanding of his role, despite our numerous questions to him about what his role was. I'm not clear on what his role was in this, but nonetheless, a terrible crime was committed. Victims have suffered for their entire lives, or their life since the crime. I'm not hearing in his voice, in his manner, I'm not hearing any sort of remorse. As Ms. Quintero pointed out, His reasons for wanting parole all concern him, and he doesn't seem to have any compassion for others aside from his brother. So I am not seeing him as a good candidate for parole to consecutive sentence, but I would listen to any input from fellow board members. Mr. Neal?
Yes. This one, okay, it's his first time up. Apparently he ran through the timeline from the other kidnapped charge that was concurrent with this one. It's kind of a quandary on this. I think I see his part in the decline, but not because of the way he explained it. But I don't really remorse any of that, in my mind and in my heart, I can't see that he's the willing candidate for any kind of release. But the issue of the next consecutive sentence comes up, and this is when the quandary comes, because we're supposed to consider all of the issues and things about the inmate and that, and then bring into it the feelings and issues with the victims, and this is one of those where although it would be there could be a one-year set-off. It comes down to the meter until he either gets released or consigned to center, something like that. The victims have to go back, be brought back through this, or is it really linked to the next continuing sentence? He would not be released. And at the end of that second sentence, that word at least, you know, 10 to 20 years down the road, he'd be eligible for parole from it. He'd still have to revert back to a life sentence, and then it could start over. But in the meantime, there might be, you know, 8, 10, 15 years of reprieve for the victim. So it's really kind of a tough issue. But at this point in time, it's his first time up. At this time, I would say I would not be in favor of putting the next consecutive sentence at this time, but it's something that the board needs to keep in mind.
Yeah. Understood. Thank you. Any other comments from board members? Mr. Quinones, do you have
any? Just briefly, I don't know what's in the heart or mind of Mr. Acid. I wasn't there. Well, we've asked some very detailed questions, but in short, his account of the event may be possible, it just doesn't sound probable, and I'm not comfortable at this point with considering parole to the next consecutive sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Mr. Buckley-White, did you have a comment?
So I agree with you. Distinguished colleague, you know, what I heard today, there is no regard for human life, there is no remorse, and there is no concern for the victims. And one of the things that we always must take into consideration, and that is the victims as well. Therefore, I'm not in favor at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to make a motion then, and my motion is that that we deny 412B parole to consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. And further, because of the date of the crime, I'm going to recommend a one-year set-off before the next year. Second. Okay, seconded by Mr. Johnson.
Agreed.
Okay, and agreed by Dr. Ray, Mr. Neal, and Mr. Quinones. The reasons for the denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life. I'm going to say serious and deviant offense, specifically because of making one of the victims disrobe, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury. I'm going to say multiple victims, truly. Victim harassment, definitely, as Mr. Sammons has said, it was essentially torture. Violated no previous probation. Let's see. No prior criminal history. I need to check lack of programming because there really are only two programs noted that he's participated in. And then we have no letters from the family, I understand there may be difficulty with transportation getting here, but certainly could attend by telephone. And it could be that Mr. Acid did not know that, but at a future hearing, he could have people attend by phone. So I'm going to check no family or community support system. Do any board members wish to add any other reasons? Okay, thank you. Back to you, Mr. Acid. The board has voted unanimously to deny your parole, and further, because the board has the option in some crimes will set off the next parole hearing for 1 year, and that's the maximum allowable in the state of Arizona. So in approximately a year, you'll be certified again by the Department of Corrections to be heard by this board. Did you hear the reasons for denial, sir?
Yes, ma'am. The thing is, I was never informed or told anything about anything about having family contact or testify. I did write to the Justice Project to ask for legal representation at the board, and because it was such a short notice, I apologize to them and have not been able to get a response or anything from them. I had no knowledge about having even had any type of availability of family to be present or telephonically.
Okay, and so the other thing is you can certainly, they can always write letters too. We welcome any kind of letters. So so you'll know that for a future hearing, sir?
Yes, but 1 year, that my mother is extremely old.
Understood, sir.
And if this rice, or this Montera, believes I'm sorry about what happened to her, as far as what, I try to keep her away from that to a certain degree. I told her to stay in the bathroom, keep away from her.
Well, sir, your hearing is concluded, and we've made a decision.
Yes.
And
but 1 year, if I remember right, we're supposed to have hearing every 6 months.
Well, the board has the opportunity through Arizona revised statute to set hearings off or set board hearings off for 1 year, sir. And in this case, we're making that choice. So your hearing is concluded. We thank you for participating today, and certainly thank you to all the victim representatives here today. Thank you for participating. And your hearing is concluded, sir. If you give the phone back to the CO3, we appreciate it.
Fine.